Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to Right Here in Mass. Today's guest is Ashley Olufsen, a TEDx speaker and Forbes featured four times founder who is passionate about uplifting others and building impactful businesses. Becoming an entrepreneur at the age of 16, Ashley's most recent venture is the Wildflower Company, planner company and supportive community that helps you cultivate a thoughtful and meaningful life. Ashley, thank you so much for being here. Please share more with our audience about you and what you do.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. So like you mentioned, I've started four different businesses, all based out of Massachusetts. The first one was workshops and summer programs for teenage girls focused on self-esteem, mental health, and leadership. Today, I run a planner company, and I'm actually starting next week, I will be the assistant director at Northeastern's Women's Entrepreneurship Programming. So
wow.
I am super excited. This is the first time that I'm kind of sharing that. And I'm just so excited to get started and really work with the amazing women founder students at Northeastern.
I love that. One of the things that we share in addition to our name is the fact that we both started our companies so young. And mm-hmm. you were 16, I was 17. That, of course, as you know, being a young founder is very different from starting a business at a different point in life. So what was your experience like with that in terms of what wanted you to start your first company? How was it like growing it being so young and just the overall spiel?
Yeah, totally. So I really didn't intend to start a company. I've always been very entrepreneurial in the sense that I've always liked to do a lot of stuff. But I wasn't intending to start a company. I actually intended to give one workshop to a group of eighth grade girls about self-esteem and leadership and really just help girls feel better about their bodies and about themselves, because that was something that I personally was struggling with. That workshop ended up going so well. My friends and I were asked to come back and do two more. And we did come back and we gave two more. And at the second, an eighth grade girl came up to me who was attending. And she was like, I love this. I'm super passionate about this. Let's start a company together and let's run summer programs. And I was like, all right, perfect. Let's do it. And that was really how I ended up starting my first business. And it was really such an act of love. I think being a young founder, I feel really lucky. I have a tremendous amount of privilege. I grew up in a wealthy town called Hopkinton, Massachusetts, as I'm sure many of the listeners are familiar with. And Hopkinton has a really phenomenal education experience. At least that was my experience with the school district. And I had a lot of support from my educators. And so the guidance counselors really worked to support me and make sure that I was able to be successful in giving these workshops. And I feel really lucky to have had such like really generous mentorship very early on. I know that's not an experience mm-hmm. that everybody gets. And my parents, my father is very entrepreneurial and he's always starting different kinds of projects and side hustles and things. So I feel really, really, really lucky to have had support at home as well.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I say is especially crucial as a young founder specifically, because when you're doing something that's so against the norm, ultimately, what other young people are doing, it's vital to have, whether it's parents or friends or other family members who are there supporting you and guiding you along the way.
Yeah. And actually, one thing that I will add that was challenging about being a young founder, and also just due to the nature of the work that I was doing, is that although I had like support from my family and from my educators, I was very publicly a feminist at the age of 15, which wasn't the coolest thing to be, and was definitely easy for high school guys to kind of mock or make fun of, and middle school boys as well. And so that was definitely challenging to be, just to have that, I don't know, negativity, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that was a challenging aspect of like dealing with middle schoolers and high schoolers, people my own age. But I overarchingly did have support, but I did want to note that as well.
Yeah, which I think is important because that's something I didn't deal with people necessarily mocking what I was doing, but I felt like embarrassed for some reason to say that I
Definitely.
had a business. I was like, people aren't going to believe me if I say that I own a
Totally.
business because I'm young.
Yeah, totally, totally, absolutely.
And so after that first business of running summer programs for girls, which I think honestly, that's when businesses end up being the best is when they're unexpected.
Yes.
After that business, tell us about the three that follow it.
Yes. So really, I kept creating businesses because I realized that it's something that I really love to do. It feels like an act of creative expression for me and something so fun for me to do. So the next business that I created was a workshop series for students that I sold to school districts on all the same MOVE topics. But it was for everyone. It was more inclusive. And that was great, but it was very challenging to sell it to school districts because, as I'm sure you know, getting into school districts is logistically a challenge. And then I ran my own, I ran Visionaria Consulting, which was kind of like a one-stop shop for all things small business. We supported founders behind the scenes with copywriting and SEO and website design and lots of different aspects of their business. And then most recently, I started the Wildflower Company with my best friend Mika, and we are a planner company. We have a 12-month undated mindfulness planner. And we also have a lot more resources to really help folks live an intentional and mindful life. We actually offer monthly workshops, as well as one-on-one coaching, as well as an accountability group and an online community to really help you meet your goals.
I love it. And with those businesses, since it's very clear that you're super multi-passionate and have so many things that you care about and are really interested in, how do you know what makes a passion a business idea? Personally speaking for me, and I
Oh.
feel like a lot of people probably struggle with this, is feeling really excited about something, but saying, should I monetize it? Or if I monetize it, will that make me not like it so much because now it's turning stressful if it's a business? Like, how do you know when to leave something as a passion or to actually pursue it as a business?
Wow, I love that question. That is so incredibly thoughtful and interesting. And I don't know truthfully, but what I do know is that my co-founder and I have other full-time roles. So we are able to pursue the Wildflower Company as a side hustle that we're okay with not profiting from. And when we do profit, we really see it as a bonus because we're safe. Obviously, the goal is to profit, but we're not like worried about supporting ourselves. We're really just trying to grow it and give it the space and time that it needs to grow. And we're being really strategic about that. So I would say, like, honestly, when it comes to having something be a hobby versus a full-time job, I would say that money probably plays a really big role into it. And if you can be financially successful with your business and you feel like it won't compromise the passion that you have, then I think it makes a lot of sense to go for it. But most businesses take a while to be profitable. And Visionaria, my consulting company, I did run full time, and that was really fun, and that was really wonderful, and I made enough money where it wasn't stressful each month. But with this, it's the Wildflower Company. It's so wonderful just to have the space to really explore it as a passion project without putting the pressure or feeling the stress that it needs to provide for me and another person. That would be very stressful, and I want this to be fun. I want this to be a like creative outlet, which it really has been.
That's a great answer. And I feel like I resonate with you on that as well, specifically with Massachusetts Business Network. I mean, if anyone who goes to our site will see that we do have some paid options, but it's really just something I'm excited about, I feel passionate about, and I love doing. So exactly what you said, Ashley, it's not necessarily about turning a profit. Of course, that's a good thing, but it's more so just like doing something that you enjoy.
Totally. And it's fun to grow it. Like, I think I'd love to take profit, in like a year from now, but I really love giving this business the space to just grow. And I love taking the money that we make right now and investing back into marketing and not worrying about making rent. Like, that is such a luxury.
Yes, I love that perspective. Do you mind if I ask you about past businesses? I want to make sure it's
Please
not a
go for
sore
it.
subject.
No. Oh my gosh, they're all so positive. I have nothing but like
Okay.
good experiences with all them. So like, yeah, they all ended simply because I outgrew them at different points, and there's slightly different reasons, but really nothing but good things to say about all the
Okay,
performances.
awesome. Because I'm specifically interested in Visionaria because you said that that was something that you did full time and had transitioned out of. So, what kind of made you realize that you were ready to kind of take a step back from full time entrepreneurship? And the reason I'm asking this is that there might be listeners who are in that same position where they are an entrepreneur and maybe they say, you know what, this isn't right for me. So I would love to hear your experience with that.
So for me, I saw my dream job posted. I wasn't planning on leaving entrepreneurship, but I saw the role of a startup coach open at a crowdfunding company called iFundWomen. And I would, in this role, get to be coaching entrepreneurs and really supporting them start and grow their businesses. I thought this sounded like an absolute dream role. So I applied because I knew the people that were working there. And when I got the job, it became pretty obvious that it was the right move to make. I think if you are feeling uncertain, because job searching and interviewing takes so long, it can never hurt just to get that process started. And even if you end up sticking with your, entrepreneurial venture, it's never a bad thing to have options, although it is a lot of work to job search on top of a business or a job.
I can imagine. Yeah, I've heard that it's like a full-time job in itself is just searching for a
Literally.
job.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so with your past businesses and especially Visionaria, did you shut them down and that was it, or did you sell them and make a profit from them?
Yeah, so I shut all of them down. So Move, my co-founder and I felt that we ran Move for 8 years. We
Oh my
felt like we
gosh.
had the best run ever. And then we felt like we were kind of outgrowing it. And then COVID hit. So we weren't really able to run the summer programs anymore. So Lexi and I were like, let's just dissolve it. We ended on such a high note. With Visionaria, I didn't think to sell it. I was honestly just moving to, this new company. At iFundWomen. So I didn't really think about closing it out. I was just kind of like, all right, let me wrap up the relationships that I have and we'll be good to go. And then with Let's Talk About It, which was the workshop series for students that I was doing with school districts, that was really kind of a failure. And like, it wasn't, it, I don't say that as like a bad thing. I learned so much from it, but that was really easy to close because it wasn't working. It wasn't sustaining us financially, and it wasn't easy to sell. So we actually gave that curriculum away for free to anyone who wants it. So if there's any teachers listening and you want really good, in my opinion, social emotional learning curriculum, you can get in touch with me and I'm happy to share it with you. But yeah, that was just easy to wrap up because I mean, it was devastating at the time, but it just didn't make sense to continue.
Yeah, and I think that's really powerful what you said with the fact that even though it quote unquote failed, you got so much out of it from what you learned and connections you likely made, experiences you had with trying to get into school districts, which, like you said, is very difficult. So I just think that's really amazing and powerful that you took a neg not negative, but took a difficult experience and really shed some light on it.
The whole thing honestly doesn't feel like a failure at all. Like looking at it from like an outside perspective, the business did fail at the end, right? Like we decided to close it down because like we weren't making money. So like in that way it was failing, right? A business had a lot of objectives, but like it needs to be able to sustain itself and we weren't able to do that. But like it doesn't really feel like a failure in my mind because of how much I learned and because of like all the wins that we had along the way, you know?
Yep, absolutely. And it sounds like from what you've been sharing with all these businesses that you started, that teaching seems to be a core interest of yours and something that you feel really passionate about.
I love that observation. I love sharing. I love curriculum. I'm such a curriculum nerd. Like I get so excited about creating a presentation, creating a structure for like a 10-week program. I think it's so fun.
Oh, I love that. And now that you have the Wildflower Company and you will be starting a new full-time career, how do you juggle the two, without feeling like you're burnt out and still making sure you have time for you and for seeing friends and all of the stuff that's, important for self-care?
So this is what I'm writing my article about, and I'm super excited. I think that there's really kind of a three-pronged approach. The first thing that you need to do if you want to balance is you really need to identify what you value, and then you need to say yes to what you value, and then you need to let go of what you don't value. And what I really mean by that is, in my life, I am doing a lot of things in that I'm balancing a career and I'm also balancing a small business side hustle. But there are a lot of opportunities that I say no to, and there are a lot of groups and things and commitments that I also say no to. I have very clear priorities, and those are the things that I spend my time on. And if it doesn't fit in with like the list of like five priorities that I have, it's either just going to get deprioritized and be less frequent, or it's just not going to happen. And I've kind of had to be okay with setting some boundaries and saying no to things, so that way I can prioritize what I want without burning myself out.
Great advice, especially with myself being a recovering people pleaser and being a woman, because women tend to say yes to everything. It can be really hard to set those boundaries and not feel guilty about saying no, even though it's in your best interest to say no. So with people who might be feeling like they need to get better at setting boundaries for themselves, do you have any advice that you could share?
Yeah. So I always say that Rome wasn't built in a day. So really be gentle with yourself as you're trying to get better at saying no. And start off by saying no to someone that you really care about and you really trust. The reason why is because you're probably going to have an easier time saying no to your best friend or partner who loves you and will be really receptive than you will to maybe a newer client that you're not as comfortable with. Once you can get more comfortable saying no to the people that you care about and that are like genuinely receptive to your needs, then I think you can start to get a little bit braver and you can start to say no to people that maybe you feel a little bit less comfortable with. And I think another thing too is like, if you have a friend like me who's very comfortable with boundary setting, run things by them. Because like yesterday, one of my good friends texted me and she was like, "Hey, is it mean or bad if I say no to this thing?" And I was like, "No, that's so inconvenient. Like, don't go out of your way to do that. Like, you just told me you don't have the time to do that. Like, say no, you got this." Mm-hmm. And then she said no. And I think like having that like reassurance helps a little bit.
Yes. And then it's like, once you do it a few times, then you catch on and it becomes like so easy to just be comfortable with saying no. And especially when you kind of think about it this way, I realized that a lot of opportunities I was presented with, when thinking about it more, benefited the other person, not me. And so when I take the time to sit with something and realize that, it makes it so much easier to say no when I'm like, okay, this is one-sided and not a two-sided situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You deserve reciprocity.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so with that, with just being a founder, there's so many highs and lows that come with it. A lot of excitement, a lot of really difficult moments. Do you have advice for anyone who's looking to start a company from the ground up or even launch a second, third, fourth company like you did?
Ooh, well, coming from a very practical standpoint, I always suggest starting with a brand kit, which is colors and fonts that you are going to use to have a unified brand. It sounds kind of silly, but it's actually a really practical and important piece of advice, because you want from day one, when you present your brand, to look as professional and unified as possible, from your social media to your website and so on and so forth. So starting with some details that are actually really important, like colors and fonts, I think is a good starting point. And then also I would say that it's really important to get feedback. I think a lot of entrepreneurs can be really scared to put their ideas out there. And I totally get that. And I've definitely been there, and it is objectively scary. So it is very like understandable to be scared. The way that I think about it is that when you share out your ideas with the world, it gives the world an opportunity to really meaningfully show up for you and support you. And so, you're going to see that. You're going to see that. It might be hard, but you're also going to see a lot of support and a lot of love.
Especially from people that you wouldn't even think would support you in the first place. Like, it's so amazing to see those surprising people.
Seriously, I crowdfunded for the Wildflower Company. Mm-hmm. We crowdfunded a little over 15K. And I was really moved and like shocked by some of the people that contributed. I had no idea. It was really, really moving.
And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's another thing I wanted to ask you about. Yeah. For anyone who's looking to crowdfund, like, could you talk more about what made you decide to do it compared to getting money from friends and family, or even just using your own money, and just what the overall process was like?
Totally. So crowdfunding is a really wonderful way to raise debt-free capital for your business. I didn't want to dig into my personal savings account because I knew that I didn't need to. I knew that I could crowdfund and I'd be able to raise money that way. When it comes to crowdfunding, there's a really clear strategy on how to do it. So make sure that you talk to someone who knows how to crowdfund, because you're just going to be way more successful if you know the strategy behind it. When it comes to crowdfunding, there's a few things that you want to do. You want to hone your pitch. You want to have a really good video with your pitch that tells your story, what you're raising money for, et cetera. You want to have really compelling rewards that people can purchase in exchange for funding you. You also want to do your network map, which is where you map out every single person in your network on all possible platforms and in your life, because you are going to have to ask for this funding from your friends and family. And if you're not sure where the money's coming from, you won't be able to set a realistic goal for yourself. Mm. And when you actually start to estimate who might contribute, then you can kind of identify a goal that seems realistic and attainable. And then the last thing is really just marketing your crowdfunding campaign. You're going to want a really clear marketing strategy on that as well.
When you're crowdfunding and you begin marketing it, do you think that founders should use their personal social media profiles, or should they start profiles for this company that might not necessarily be ready yet?
It's definitely personal because crowdfunding is a very, it's a very relational thing. And this is interesting because this is actually why women are better, I've heard, at crowdfunding than men are. We're going to have to find the stats to back that up. But I've heard that like crowdfunding is the only form of funding that like women are just consistently and statistically, like they raise more than men in. And it's because like women are generally connected and have somewhat of a network. Right. Yep. And that's what, like, in order to be successful at crowdfunding, you need a few things. One, you need a network. And even if you have, you know, like, 20 people in your network, that's still a network, right? But then you also need the strategy. And if you have both, you can be successful. And the degrees of how much you have both will just make your success bigger or smaller.
I love that. And I especially love that you mentioned a network map, which I honestly have never been heard of before. But once you explain it, I'm like, that's a really cool idea. So would you say that
personal CRM?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Would you say that it only works in a crowdfunding situation, or are there other uses for it that can be really helpful?
Yeah. I mean, I think like, so one of the reasons why I love doing a network map was because anytime I like needed something or thought of an opportunity, I just look at my list. So for example, we at the Wildflower Company, we have monthly workshops that are guest led on a different mindfulness or intentionality focused topic. It could be anything, like how to be more intentional with your finances, how to create a skincare routine that works for you, whatever it is, right? I can look through my network map and just see the wealth of knowledge that is present in my network. And then I know who to ask just to start. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so useful.
That's good to know. And that's something that like I'm mentally noting that I'm going to have to start doing because I'll give you an example. I literally posted on LinkedIn a week ago as of this recording date, asking if anyone in my network knew of someone within a chamber of commerce. And so I think if I were to have it like physically jotted down of every single person I know, it would probably help me to be able to identify the right people for that opportunity.
Spot on. Mm-hmm.
I love it. And another thing too, that goes along with crowdfunding and just being a founder in general, is getting comfortable with asking people for things and doing cold outreach, especially to people you might not know. Have you had success with that? And if so, I would love to hear your process of being able to reach out to companies that you have no relationship with yet and being able to find success in it.
Yeah. So I don't know if I reach out a ton to companies or like people that I don't know at all. But usually I am reaching out to someone that I have a very loose connection with. And the framework that I use is very simple. It is, you know, stating the connection, wishing them well, you know, sharing anything personal that I have. And then describing a little bit about what I'm working on, one or two sentences with maybe a website links for them to learn further. Mm-hmm. And then three, I'm making the ask. Just pretty straightforward, pretty simple, pretty clear. So that way they understand what it is. Actually, you know what? I reached out to someone yesterday that I didn't know at all, and it was successful. And it was the Wildflower Company's 1 year like public anniversary is in March. And so I found this local Boston shop that does like flower arrangement workshops. And I reached out to them because I would love to host an event there for the Wildflower Company for our 1 year anniversary where we can do like flower arrangements. And I reached out to them completely cold on their Instagram. And I followed that exact process of, you know, stating who I am, what I'm up to, just one or two sentences, very simple. And then here's my vision. Is it possible to talk further about this? And they responded first thing this morning and said, yes, you can email us here.
Oh, that's amazing. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes or mantras that I try to remind myself, which is, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. And mm-hmm. so, and also the one behind me, for anyone who can see that, like, get comfortable with the uncomfortable. And so that's what really it entails, whether you own a business or work for an organization in your career and some places where you need to advance, you do have to kind of step out of your comfort zone and do something that you might not have done before, but it can bring you so many opportunities from that.
Absolutely. Spot on.
And what you've done with a few of your companies as well is have a co-founder. And so I would love to talk about that as well. I have heard both ends of the spectrum with it being really wonderful to have a partner that complements you, but other people have had not so great experiences and it kind of leads to a tricky situation. Yeah, so two questions for you with this. One, with your companies, how did you know when to use a co-founder and when to go solo? And secondly, how do you make a co-founder relationship work while still having like the co-founder relationship, but the friend relationship?
Totally, totally. So I love this question because I actually feel really passionately about being so pro co-founder. I always want a co-founder. I always prefer working with a team, working with a co-founder. Like that is always 100% my preference. And the reason why is just because I know my strengths, I know my weaknesses. I think I'm so much better off doing this with someone that I love and that I care about and who has strengths that can offset my weaknesses. So I think really for me, it's been like how to choose a co-founder that really makes sense. And I think like luck comes into that. And then also you have to know what you're looking for. I think with a co-founder, it's really important that you share the same vision and the same enthusiasm. I think it's also really important that both of you are committed to contributing. Otherwise, one of you is going to be doing a lot more and that's not going to be fair or line up the way that, I mean, that's not a co-founder, right? Like then that's like a team member, right? So I think I've met people that have had mutual passion and interest as me, who have been willing to really contribute, but then also who are very comfortable balancing skill sets. And I have always worked with best friends because I feel like in my friendships, I have such a mutual respect and love for one another. And so it's actually really fun to build a business with a best friend because we're there to celebrate all the high highs together. And then when there's a low or low, we both care so much about each other that we're really able to have a good conversation about it and support one another through that process. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. Yeah, that's super helpful. And when building with a best friend, how do you like shut off work talk and shut off work brain and really be able to focus on the friendship and having fun as friends compared to business partners?
Yeah, definitely. So I think It's a good question. So we used to, Mika, my co-founder for Wildflower Company, we used to have a group chat with our intern slash team member, Dasha, where we would exclusively put all the Wildflower stuff. And then our personal text messages was just for us being besties. But then Dasha was like, you guys are texting in here all the time. And I'm like, I like don't need to be a part of these conversations. So Mika and I were like, okay, we'll scale it back. So I would say, now Mika and I primarily text and FaceTime to just like talk about, you know, our personal stuff and mm-hmm. be friends. But if there is something more like that we're excited about or more time sensitive, we will text. Otherwise, we really try and put everything in Notion, which is where we work mm-hmm. off of. And that's kind of like our project management tool. Or I've actually started emailing her. If I have like bigger ideas or things that I want her approval on before I move forward with them, I've started emailing.
I love that, the idea of using Notion and sending an email, because then she's able to respond to it or get to it on her time and not necessarily exactly. like if she's focusing on her and get a text message, exactly. she knows it's okay if she doesn't answer right away. So I think that's totally. I think that's amazing to have both of you setting those boundaries.
Yeah. And I think both of us are also very easygoing, and we both know that the other person is working like as hard as they can when they can. And we mm-hmm. also know that the other person is relaxing when they should be relaxing. So if we do text each other about something business related and the other doesn't respond, neither of us is like thrown off or stressed, because we're like, thank God they are taking care of themselves. And we know that they'll respond to it when they get the moment to.
Absolutely. And speaking of taking care of yourselves, I've noticed just from following you on Instagram that you really set clear self-care routines and rituals that you do, and which I think is so important to have as an entrepreneur and as a professional mm-hmm. for another organization. So how do you find like that me time, and what does that consist of? Mm-hmm. What would you recommend mm-hmm. for people who realize that they need to set some time for themselves?
Yeah. So for me, I am pretty sacred about my sleep schedule. I get really grumpy and stressed during the workday if I have not had enough sleep the night before. And so I consistently go to bed at 10 p.m. and I say no to everything after 10. And that is because if I don't get my sleep, I'm going to be really mad at myself the next day, because I'm not going to be able to perform at the level that I want to, and quite frankly, need to, given all this right. different stuff that I'm doing. So sleep schedule is a big part of my self-care. Another big part of my self-care is my skincare routine. This just feels really, really good to do. It feels like I'm taking good care of myself and my body. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty good about that as well. And then also something that I've started doing more recently the past few months is actually just giving myself space in the morning. I've been waking up earlier. I've been working from home, so I've been able to wake up at 7 and have a full morning. Now I might actually be waking up a little bit earlier, but I've been waking up at 7 and really like giving myself the space to do whatever I want that morning and really feel intuitively what's going to be best for me. Some days that means going for a walk or getting outside, going on a Peloton ride. Other days that means laying in bed and reading, you know? So mm-hmm. I like giving myself the space to really consider my needs for that particular day. And some days it's sleeping in.
Yeah, which I think is so important too. I used to like get so mad at myself if I would sleep in later than I wanted to, but then I would realize, well, if I start my day so tired, like I'm not going to show up and be my best self. Exactly. And I love the idea of having slow mornings, which is something that I've started to do as well. I felt like jumping right into everything right away is what would make my anxiety increase. And I would start to get really stressed because I was like, gotta go, 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 go. But when you take the time to sit with your thoughts and journal or meditate, or even just do whatever you'd like, I think it really sets the tone for a productive and inspirational day.
And you know what's interesting? I actually totally, when I wake up, I will usually have like some like racing thoughts and anxiety about like all the stuff that I need to do that day. So what I actually do is instead of starting to work, which I used to do, like, oh my God, so many emails, so much needs to get done, I actually just make a list of every single thing that I need to do, including like answer texts, clear out inbox, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then once I make that to-do list, then I can go have my slow morning and I can relax. I will also put Peloton, shower, I'll put read, whatever I'm doing that morning, I'll put that on the list. So then I don't feel like, oh my God, I'm not accomplishing this stuff on my list. Now I'm stressed out. I will literally put whatever I'm doing that morning on the list and then cross it off after and then feel like, oh, okay, I did what I need to do this morning.
Which is so important to do. And I love that you said that too, because that happens to me almost every workday morning. I wake up and I'm like, I have so much stuff to do, not enough time to do it, just like stress, stress, stress. But what I started doing is just, like you said, writing down everything that needs to get done. And then once I look at my calendar and once I look at my tasks, I'm like, oh, it's actually not as much as I think it is.
Yeah, totally.
I have plenty of time. I'm just stressing myself out for no reason. And so I love that you share a similar routine and ritual to focus on, because it can really do so much as a founder to have mindset in addition to strategy.
Definitely. Love that combination of mindset and strategy. Mm-hmm.
So important for sure. And being a founder, many people often think as like New York or Los Angeles as being like the founder hub and the startup hub. Have you found that community in Boston?
Yeah, definitely. I totally have. I feel like so happy to be here in Boston. Something that one of my friends does, Kylie Borgeli, is called the Inno Crew. I highly recommend everyone in Boston checks it out. It is a really great monthly dinner for founders in the Boston area. You should totally come. And then also just, I feel really lucky. I have quite a few friends who have started businesses in the Boston area. And Twitter has been really helpful in connecting me with others as well. So I feel no shortage of connections in the Boston area.
I love that. For someone who's looking to build connections, especially if they're newer in their career or starting their business, what would you recommend for them to find the right organizations or find the right people to connect with?
Yeah, I would honestly just recommend reaching out to someone like me or you, because chances are someone who's done it before, really, right? Someone who's built a business, because chances are you're going to have a million connections and ideas. And I will too. I can get really specific depending on your age, your location, you know, how new you are. Like, I know of so many communities and things. So yeah, for sure.
Awesome. And with starting your new position this month, as of our recording date, do you see yourself having a full-time job in addition to your side hustles and passion projects forever? Do you think that you might one day end up going back to full-time entrepreneurship?
I love that question so much. I'm really not sure. I really want to have a career for like a 9-to-5 for the next few years. That feels really important to me. I feel like I'm really young and I have a lot to learn, and I want to learn from someone who's older than me and smarter and wiser. And I feel like Northeastern's really going to give me that opportunity. I feel like I haven't seen a lot of like great leadership thus far in my career. And so like, I'm craving that, you know, like mentorship and leadership. And so I really want to see that. I don't think that like I think it's always an option that I'll go back to full-time entrepreneurship. I always think about starting a copywriting agency, but I just don't want, like, I'm so happy to be having a 9-to-5 right now, in addition to a side hustle. The other thing is like the wildfire company doesn't require a full-time schedule, you know, like there's no need for it to be full-time. That would just be stressful. So I feel really excited about like what is to come, and we'll see what happens. I'm definitely open-minded. I'm obviously super entrepreneurial. And so we'll see what happens.
And your new position is the perfect fit for you with your experience. How did you find out about that?
Oh, what a good question. So I know the executive director, and because I've spoken at Northeastern a bunch over the past few years. And so I reached out to her and just kind of asked if she was hiring, and it ended up working out really, really magically.
Oh, amazing. And what will you be doing in that role?
Yeah, so I'll be managing kind of the day-to-day operations of women's entrepreneurship at Northeastern, serving as the staff advisor to all the programming, hosting events, and really just facilitating relationships between myself and students, myself and alumni, the center and alumni, et cetera. So I am so excited.
And you'll be able to bring your experience and your connections into this role, which I think is wonderful.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Awesome. And speaking of entrepreneurship, What would you say your favorite local businesses to support are?
Yes, my favorite local business is Brookline Booksmith. I live in Brookline right now, and that bookstore is so gorgeous and beautiful and amazing, and I just absolutely love it. And we were talking about reading earlier. I love reading, so it's been really, really fun to support Brookline Booksmith. Would definitely recommend it to everyone.
I've heard amazing things about it, and I hear that it's like always packed, which just
you
goes to
been?
Show. No, I have not.
You gotta go. Come to
I do
Brookline
have
and get
to go.
coffee.
I know, seriously. Seriously, that would be a blast. But
Yeah.
I have heard that it's like always busy, which just goes to show as like a testament to Brookline
Yeah.
Booksmith how much of an amazing business it is.
Yeah, totally. It's super incredible. You would love it.
Oh, I would have a field day in that
Yeah,
place.
you absolutely would.
Awesome. Well, Ashley, this has been such an amazing episode. I've really enjoyed chatting with you and learning so much from you. And I imagine our listeners will as well. And I'd love if you could share where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for such a thoughtful and wonderful interview. This has been really, really lovely. And I really appreciate our conversation and you. You can find me at Ashley Olufsen or at The Wild Flow Co. Also ashleyolufsen.com, also thewildflowco.com. So yeah, be in touch.
Awesome. And I will link to all of those places in the show notes in case our
Thanks.
Listeners missed it. But thank you so much again for being a guest on today's podcast.
Thank you. I had a blast.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.